me. A fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive back one more time. I don't know how many this make for in our second year. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. If you want to join in the discussion, it's 800-407-KSAV or via email talk during the program talk at ksav.org. All right. We'll dispense with all of my interesting commentary. Who's going to start things off this week?
Oh, I might as well do it. I have nothing better.
Force of habit.
Yeah. All righty. In season one of The Fugitive, in episode number 5, which is the second part of Never Wave Goodbye, at the very end of this episode, Richard Kimball walks away from what many of us believe was the love of his life, the person he should have ended up with, and that was Karen. He walks off the beach, leaves her there, very distraught, and leaves many of us very distraught. There could never be another Karen. And to be honest with you, for the rest of season one, there isn't really any serious love interest for Kimball. There are a few flirtatious moments with a couple of women, but they're not really worthy of him, most notably Sophie, who's one of the worst. And so there's no serious love interest from episode 5 all the way through the first season. And then we get to the second season in episode number 32, and now we have the second serious love interest for Richard Kimball, and that's a woman named Ellie Burnett, who turns out to be an old family friend, which is a big surprise to all of us because we've never heard of her. And this brings up one thing about the series that really irritates me, and that is the fact that they drop new characters into the series whenever they please, without giving any background or any reason for them to be there or telling us anything about them at all. And in this episode, World's End, number 32, the second of season 2, Richard Kimball is in the diner having a meal, as he often does. He's looking through the paper, and he sees an ad placed by somebody claiming to have information about the night of the murder. Gives a phone number, and he calls it up, and we find him talking to a woman named Ellie, who is played by Suzanne Plachet, who has never looked better, by the way, in my opinion, than she does in this episode. And if there was ever a woman in the series who could give Susan Oliver playing Karen a run for her money, it's Suzanne Plachet, that's for sure. But the thing is, who is this woman? Because we see them talk on the phone, and I said in my review that's in our second book that none of this makes any sense. When this episode begins, we're completely in the dark. We don't know who she is. Kimball seems to know her, so he makes a telephone call, as was suggested in the ad, and it seems that they know each other quite well. Another big surprise. We've never heard anybody mention her in the past. And she has some information about the one-armed man, apparently given to her by an investigator who she has hired, or turns out her father had hired, to try to get some information about the one-armed man. Ellie Burnett, it turns out, and then they have this very kind of bizarre scene afterwards, because not only does Kimball see this ad in the paper, but Gerard has also seen the ad in the paper, which strikes me as being very odd. Because not only does Gerard now have time to run all over the country every time Kimball is seen anywhere, he now has the time to sit and read all the newspapers in the area and look through all the little tiny ads in the back of the paper, all the little personal ads, to see if there's anything there. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't know where the man possibly finds the time. A miracle happens, and he sees it, too. So now we've got Gerard on the case, too. And he goes to visit Ellie's mother, and we get this long scene here where he talks to her about Ellie, and it turns out, strangely enough, that Ellie is the daughter of the man who defended Kimball at his trial, and he apparently has passed away. And she, according to Gerard, she's always been secretly in love with him. she was always at the trial. He tells her mother she was always there every day of the trial, and he's convinced that she's been carrying a torch for him ever since, and that the person who put this ad in the paper is indeed Ellie Burnett. So now we've got this. We've got a whole new character in the series, in the story, and it's very odd because we saw scenes of the trial in The Girl from Little Egypt in season one. Never saw her. Never heard about her. We haven't heard about a thing. Where does she come from? I mean, how far back does it go? Was Kimball cheating on Helen? I don't even understand it. Where this woman comes from, and not only that, but then we find out also that even Gerard is a family friend, and he's been going over to their house to eat dinner with his wife. Kitty, tell me something. Is this whole setup here not a mess or what?
Well, it does seem a little... Definitely it's contrived. But then again, what else is new for the show? she's the daughter of the defense attorney.
Yeah.
And she's hired a private investigator, and I find it interesting that it didn't occur to her defense attorney to hire a private investigator to look for the one-armed man while the trial, or even say before the trial, was going on.
Yeah, isn't this like a year later, you know?
Yeah, it's like she waits until he's exhausted all of his appeals and now he's on the run, so now she's hired an investigator to search for the one-armed man. I mean, I guess it's better late than never. I don't know. I mean, I found her mother, you know, we get treated to her mother, and in the end, I didn't really like Ellie very much, and I found her mother rather irritating.
But you don't, this is what really irritates me about the series. You know, this is not the only time they do this. They do it several times. It appears that we often talk about the lack of consistency. So a writer comes along, and we know that they picked writers from here and writers from there, anybody who had a good story, which is fine. I have no problem with that. So a writer comes along, and he has a story in hand. There's absolutely nothing, very little or nothing to do with what's happened in the past. And it's about this woman named Ellie, and there's no background, so they just decide, well, that's okay, we'll just drop her in there, and we'll just have this scene where everybody finds out she's an old family friend. And I think it really hurts it because I have no connection with her. That's the problem. Now, you know, you and I talked about a week ago, privately, about how it might have been a more interesting story if instead of this new woman, Ellie, coming along and hiring a private investigator, if Karen had come back. Remember we had that discussion?
Oh, yeah.
If Karen, having taken over the sailing business from her uncle who died.
Yeah, and thrown Lars out.
Right, and if it was successful, she's gotten some money together a year later, and now she's hired an investigator. Don't you think it would have made him more? Let's ask Ken, because I know he doesn't ever want Karen to come back. Can you buy any of that, Ken?
I certainly think it would have been more intriguing.
Yeah, this episode is all over the map. I said in my review, I don't know if you looked in our book. You know, I read your review, Bill. That is a long review on that episode.
I know, and it almost killed me to do it. Yeah, it was a lot to put in there, yeah.
You know what? This should have been the first episode of season two, because Suzanne Pleshette, you know, and Gerard, that's a good way to start the season. You know, you draw the audience. That's what I said in my review. But you know what I would have done? I would have left out the one-armed man angle, and I would have... I would have used Ellie, but the story I would have written would be she's an old flame of Kimball.
Yeah.
And she looks him up and she finds him, and Kimball's drawn to another love interest, because you're right. In season one, all we had was Karen.
Right.
And that was the true love story, really, in season one.
Right.
And so in season two, I say, no, you don't bring Karen back, because Kimball made a mistake by leaving her on the rock, and you don't bring Karen back again. You start with another, you know, love interest, and then let's see how Kimball handles it, you know. You know, he's on the run, he's lonely, you know, he needs a woman, and Ellie's very attractive. And they could have written the story that way. What do you think?
Well, you don't ever want Karen to come back. You're really hard on that. You just, I've thrown this out here several times, and you just, this firm belief that because he left her there on the beach at the end of Never Wave Goodbye,
he broke by the fact that he really didn't have much of an alternative.
Huh?
Well, he didn't exactly have much of an alternative.
Well, I know, and that's how I feel about it. But Ken acted though, well, he just said he made a mistake. He made a mistake leaving her on the beach. In other words, he should have left Gerard there to die.
No, what I'm saying is he could have kept in contact with Karen and said, all right, I'm going to do this, but, you know, let's exchange phone numbers and we can meet again later down the road. But he didn't.
Right, and Gerard will just put a tap on Karen's phone and have her mail monitored.
Because Gerard's laying there on the beach, so anything they're saying, he can hear his conscience. So.
I doubt it.
Wow. Well, anyway, I don't have a problem necessarily with bringing this new woman in, but I just think that it's just a little annoying to me when it's like characters drop out of an airplane by parachute and they just fall right into the series whenever they need them. That if you were a writer and you came up with a story, I don't know how it works in Hollywood. Maybe it even works that way today. I don't really notice it in TV, but. You know, you would think that you would have to write a story that was consistent with the series, but you just can't write an independent story and then kind of fit it in there. And that's what they're always doing. They're doing one of these round pegs and square hole things.
Well, and you know, this story I don't think would have been quite so bad if the writer didn't decide to make Ellie such a conniving character and her mother such a dope. I mean, you've got her mother who you know, initially she holds her own in a conversation with Gerard, and she actually does believe that Richard Kimball is innocent. And yet once Ellie tells her that she and Richard are running away, what does she do? She calls Gerard to spill the whole story. You know, and then you've got Ellie who lies to Richard Kimball, making him think that the one-armed man that killed Helen is dead just so he'll run away to South America with her.
But you know what? Here's another thing that really bothers me. Okay, so let's just say that I accept all of that, the fact that they bring a new character in. It's an hour story. There's no time for background and all that. That's true. But they lay it on too thick, and even in your review in the book, you say that you thought it was a conflict of interest that Gerard actually was also a friend of the family, and he used to go over there and eat there with his wife. Remember that?
Yeah.
He says right in there, he says, yeah, I go over there with my wife to eat dinner, and she's always talking about how she believes Kimball's innocent. I mean, why lay it on that thick? You've already explained it. Now you got to have, in other words, everybody's a friend of the family. I mean, he's having this affair with this woman, their father. And remember in The Girl from the Middle Ages, remember the lawyer that was sitting there at the table? What a nothing he was. He objected to one thing, and everything else the prosecutor was doing is breaking
he pretty much sat there like a deaf mute.
Yeah, he was breaking every legal precedent ever known, and he just sat there. So I'm afraid I don't think much of Ellie's father as the defense attorney. You know what? I think that there's I actually gave the story a 9. I mean, I couldn't get much higher than that because I think it is an interesting story, but I think that the story they didn't do may be more interesting than the story that they did do, which was what was going on at the trial, what was all this business with, you know, family, friends, and lawyers and daughters and things like that, than the story that they actually came up with. So there's a lot going on here that really doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, there's a lot of parts of this that I really do like. One of the things I like in this story is Suzanne Plachet's portrayal here, because I always enjoy, you know, whenever anybody takes on Gerard and is not afraid to face him down. And she has several scenes with him in which she really lets him have it. And did you ever notice, I thought about this the other day, that Gerard pushes all the men in the series out of the way. You know, other police officers, and he comes into town and blows them away. Did you ever notice that he really has a problem with women? That it's the women in the series that always let him have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You had the prostitute in that story that we did recently in the Endgame.
Amy.
Yeah. Amy and Ellie. I mean, they just, you know, when you put him in the scene with a woman, he loses.
Yeah, that's true. Even his own wife.
Well, I can identify with that. So I'll tell you what, on that note, very appropriate. Let's take a quick time out. We'll be right back to talk a bit more Fugitive after this important message here on Sheravision Radio.
The best television on Tuesday night takes place on the radio. Talkin' Television with Dave White discusses anything and everything concerning television, past, present, and future. Specially featured programs, interesting guests, favorite theme songs, nostalgic commercials, blended with listener phone calls and emails, make the 90 minutes from 7:30 through 9 p.m. Pacific Time a different and entertaining interlude. So make a point on Tuesday to stop watching television and start talking about watching television. 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific on KSAV, world-class radio on the World Wide Web.
I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me. A fugitive must be.
There are fugitives, and then there are fugitives, and then there are the fugitives' women. And if you want to know who they are, check out Ken's office walls. They're all plastered up there. Talking Fugitive with Ken and Kitty and Bobby, and they're going to pick up right here. So who wants to start off part two?
You can give it back to me.
All right.
When we come back in 2 weeks, we're going to take on one of Ken's pet peeves. He's talked about this endlessly on the message board at the Fugitive Views and Reviews. So I think it's finally time to let him vent on the radio, too. And that is this business in the series of guest stars coming back multiple times to portray different characters. And that's something that particularly bothers me, and I don't think it particularly bothers Kitty, but it does bother Ken. He certainly doesn't like it. The Fugitive is actually very well known as being a series that had a real knack for picking the right people for the right parts. However, they couldn't seem to leave it there. Some people never come back, such as Susan Oliver, who I wanted to come back, while other people come back again and again and again. And the question is that a good idea? Does it hurt the series? Does it hurt the original character that they played? We've talked a lot about it on the board, and in 2 weeks we'll come back and we'll talk about it here and see whether we can convince Ken that's not quite as bad as he thinks it is. So let's get into this episode now as it plays out. And, you know, it's an interesting story, but I watched it again yesterday, and really not a whole lot happens in it, strangely enough. It's not one of the most exciting stories, and when we get to the end of it, it's really a disappointment, as Ken pointed out in his review. And the whole thing is that we have a lot of scenes between, like I said, Gerard and Ellie, and we have the usual requisite kissing scenes between Kimmel and Ellie as well. And she basically lies to him. Her investigator had first told her that the one-armed man had died on a farm in a barn fire. Then he went back and found out that it was a case of mistaken identity. So she allows Kimball to think that the one-armed man is dead and that he really has nothing to lose by running off with her to Brazil, of all places. I don't know exactly why they picked Brazil, but they did. And this is really very self-serving, and it looks that way from the moment it begins. Because one of the main issues about this entire series is that Kimball's never going to give up. He's never going to stop searching for the one-armed man. They have a character in here saying to him, hey, give up. Stop it already. He's not even alive. What do you hope to gain by any of this? But she's lying, and that really turns us against her. I mean, Karen would have done anything in the world for Kimball, and she even managed to dive into shark-infested waters for him. She'd do anything. Whereas Ellie's only looking out for herself. She obviously wants to run off with him, go play footsie with him somewhere, and she doesn't really care. So when she finds out from the investigator that the one-armed man is indeed still alive, she allows Kimball to think that he's gone. In this particular scene, there's one line that I really like, one of my favorite lines in the series. Not only does David Jansen do a great job in looking crestfallen and devastated when he finds out from her that the one-armed man is dead, but he says to her, if he's dead, I'm dead. That's one of my favorite lines in the series because it says a lot about the series. That's true. The whole thing just depends on the possibility that he may find the person who committed the crime. If that man is dead, and that's something we never really talk about, that the one-armed man, even if he doesn't get caught, might die somewhere along the line, and then what do you do? So I really like that line. But Ellie comes across right away as being very selfish. Ken, I know that you mentioned in your review that that really turned you off the whole character, right?
Oh, yes. I forgot to mention, I better not keep all you guys in suspense anymore.
What's that?
Ellie is in my Hall of Fame pictures.
Oh, well, I assume that.
Okay.
She's too beautiful not to be there. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, what intrigued me about the Fugitive series in general was the women that Kimbo meets.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it starts off right away with Monica, you know, in the very first episode, the pilot episode. You know, there was a little love story there. And then you have Karen. And then the others are just kind of run-ins, but not really love. And then this one, what turned me off, you mentioned in my review, the thing that turned me off is that she lied to Kimball.
Right.
And you can't do that. Monica would never do that. Monica Wells.
Right.
Karen would never do that. But Ellie did. You know, you can't live a lie with someone, and especially Richard Kimball, because by lying, you know, Kimball, you know, if he flees to Brazil, he's going to have that guilt. He'll never be cleared. And the whole thing with Helen will never really be solved. So
what do you think would have happened had he gone with her to Brazil and then found out a couple of years down the line that she had lied to him and that he was really, the one on man was still alive? Think he would have up and left?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, I think he would have.
Wow.
I mean, but, you know, for me, one of the things that definitely does not work in this episode is that he never indicates that he loves her. You know, he never says that he does. And we even have a scene where she says, I know you don't love me, but I'm willing to bet everything that you will eventually. That's why I'm running away with you. You know, she says something to that effect. And then at the end, when she finally confesses that the one-armed man really is out there, stops the car, gets out, and he gives her this big passionate kiss. And and she says, you never kissed me like that before. And he says, well, I never loved you before. And I was like, excuse
me? Can you explain that to me? What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah,
does
I'm
he
like,
love her now, or is he saying he never
now,
did, or
now
what?
Now that he finds out that she lied to him, and now she just confessed out of guilt and everything, it's like, give me a break. He ought to be mad at her. He ought to tell her to, you know, to take a hike instead of giving her a kiss goodbye.
Well, you know what's interesting about this theory that she has that he's going to run away? Considering the fact that she's a family friend, supposedly, and supposedly knows him better than all these other women do, why would she even assume he would run away? Hasn't he proven he's not going to do that? Remember, he went to Alaska and then he came back?
So yeah, that's true.
And Gus Priamos tried to get him to go to Greece, you know, and he wouldn't do that?
Well, actually, he almost... I thought he almost did that.
What, with Gus?
No, that's right. He and Gus were switching places.
Yeah, but at first Gus wanted him to go. Remember, Gus wanted him to go to Greece, and then Kimball said, I can't go there, I don't know the language.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any support system there, what am I going to do in a strange country? So he shows no inclination whatsoever that he's going to leave. Because I've said about series for years that if you really want to solve the series, just tell him to leave the country. Don't tell me he can't get out of the country. Sure he can.
Yeah.
I mean, Gerard's the only cop who's looking for him. They don't exactly have... it's not like looking for Osama bin Laden. They're not, you know, they're not looking under in every mountain, in every cave. So he can certainly get out here if he wants to. But the whole premise is that he's not going to leave no matter what. So Ellie seems kind of stupid to me to actually believe that he would do that even when he hears that the one army is in it. I thought it was foolish.
But put yourself in Richard Kimball's shoes as a fugitive, you know, two years on the run now. And, you know, he needs a woman, you know, along the way, because, you know, he's running into these crazy families. He's running into crazy cops, tracking them down. And, you know, Ellie must have been a breath of fresh air, really. And so
I don't know. I mean, the women that he seems drawn to are just, most of them just seem so stupid. I mean, obviously he's really hard up, but I don't have a lot of sympathy for him in that regard.
But this episode should have been written a little different. You know, make it a love story, and then Kimball's torn, and then have Gerard, you know, track them both down, and then Kimball has to make decisions, and I don't know, this one-arm man angle, and he's dead, and then Kimball falls for it. I mean, come on, Kimball, you got to be a little smarter than that.
Well, you know, while we're talking about love interest, don't leave out the fact that David Jansen was really having a real off-screen love affair, cheating on his wife with Suzanne Plachet. So maybe that's part of the end of the story there, when he says to her, well, I've never loved you before, but now I am, both in this story and when we get off the set later, too, as well.
Was Suzanne married at the time?
You know,
I don't know,
that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I'll have to go to her biography and see. she probably was, yeah. I never even thought. I'm so wrapped up in what he was doing.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, I really don't know. And when we come back in 2 weeks and we talk about the guest stars coming back,
yeah,
that she's one of them who comes back later on in another story. And in the second story, when she comes back, she's also very self-serving and trying to take her child away from her husband, who she's divorced from.
You think David Jansen had some input with the writers and say, hey, you got to have a love scene in there or some kissing scenes?
Well, I wouldn't surprise. I mean, in The Fugitive Recaptured and even in the other Fugitive book, they say that he did have a lot of input into the series. He did make suggestions,
yeah,
in scenes about how to play it and what to do. So it wouldn't really surprise me. I just find that ending line to be very strange. It doesn't make any sense to me. And also, in your review, Ken, you point out how disappointing it is, and I certainly agree with this, that you have that scene where Gerard is at the airport waiting for them to show up, and they're driving the car, and it looks like we're going to have one of those great chases at the very end, and they never get to the airport. Talk about killing off the suspense.
Oh, yeah, and they did that in Somebody to Remember with Gus.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, no. So you're going to do this big build-up, and then somehow you just kind of strangle it right before it gets to the finish line. It seems such a pity. This one, I wasn't so as much bothered in Somebody to Remember as I was here, because watching Gerard walking around the plane, he's looking at his watch, and he's waiting, well, boy, they're walking right into this trap. You know, I got him this time. There's no getting out of this. And it looks, really, when they're driving the car, and he's
okay,
made up his mind.
One minute.
Okay, he's made up his mind he's going to run off with her, that we're going to have this great scene at the end, and instead she changes it. And how realistic was it? Didn't you find it a little strange that she just had this great guilty conscience at the end, Kitty, and all of a sudden she decided to give it up?
Yeah. I did think that was weird. I mean, it seemed like a cop-out ending. I think a much better ending would have been where maybe, you know, where, first of all, she wasn't, you know, the person who lies to him, that maybe they don't find out till the very end together, and then we get a chase scene.
Yeah.
And then at the end, the last thing she says to Richard is, I'm still going to keep looking for him, Richard.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, that would have certainly put her character more up there with the Karen character.
I like that better.
And would you have brought Ellie back maybe in season 3 or 4?
No, if you can't have Karen, I don't want Ellie. Sorry.
Well, she certainly would have been a logical character to have, you know, around at the end, because, you know, she lived in Stafford, supposedly.
All right, and we're at the end, and what I'm going to suggest is that after this episode, Suzanne Plachet ran off with Bob Newhart and did a sitcom. And if you don't like that, well, we'll be back in 2 weeks, folks, and we'll pick up with more Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. So you be here as well. And also in 2 weeks, it's the second anniversary program of Talking Television with Dave White. Would you guys believe it? 2 years. They didn't think I'd last two episodes.
I didn't either. It's amazing.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that vote of confidence.
All right.
We'll see you all again in 2 weeks, folks, here on Retro Radio.